Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
There's Lindegaard making Forrest back pedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris. He's found him via the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil.
Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Madden, after just 6 minutes, gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott, goal!
Hello and welcome to the Glovers Cast. I'm Ian and this evening I'm joined by Ben Barrett and a different Dave. We've got Dave Pryor of Three Valleys Radio. Welcome to the podcast, gentlemen.
Hello, sir.
Hello, mate. Dave Fraud. If you like, today. A fraudulent Dave.
You're all Daves. It's a like-for-like Dave substitution.
Happy Daves.
Unbelievable prior. We're 24 hours removed from our defeat at the hands of Bournemouth in the FA Cup. We're here to talk about the match. We've got a few questions from the listeners. But most importantly, the treble is still on. We've only dropped out of the FA Cup, which I think, you know, was never really on the cards. But what do we think? What do we make of that game? It was a nice experience at Hewish Park. I mean, I think obviously all three of us have watched the game. Dave's watched it from behind a glass window in his ivory tower at Hewish Park. Ben's watched it while working. And I was a little bit exposed to the elements in the press box. I think when the game kicked off, all of a sudden there was just this massive gust of wind. And you all know, Ben, when you're sat in a press box and there's a gust of wind and all the paperwork, all of a sudden everyone's like, shit, holding down their stuff. There was that moment, literally, as the game kicked off. And I think there was a few tweets on Twitter, talking about how...
So are you saying, Ian, that none of us were actually able to enjoy it? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. There was a few tweets for those watching at home saying, are you going to film on... Why are you filming on an iPad or something like that? But the conditions were really tricky at the start of the game. But which of you wants to go first? Ben, let's go with you. You were at home or at work or whatever, watching the game. How did it come across on the television?
It felt like we were a half-decent National League side playing against a very good Championship side. And I know that's blindingly obvious to say, but I felt like we made a reasonable account of ourselves, and the differences between the two sides are the differences that you'll find between decent, half-reasonable National League sides and decent, very good Championship sides, namely Emiliano Marcondes, who I thought was absolutely incredible all night, and the sloppy errors that National League sides make. And when you're in the National League, you get away with them. when you're up against Bournemouth, albeit a vastly changed Bournemouth, you don't get away with them. And that's as simple as that. I'm not going to be calling out too much about that performance in a negative manner. We gave it a go, second half particularly. We never gave up. We never gave in. We never gave them an easy ride. They capitalized on our errors, and they didn't make enough errors for us to capitalize on. And so, for me, tinge a little disappointment, because there was a genuine feeling of we could, and we've seen elsewhere, we've seen shocks and FA Cup upsets. Forest have done Arsenal, Cambridge have done Newcastle, and Kidderminster have done Reading and things like that. And Shrewsbury have given Liverpool a scare, and Morecambe gave Spurs a scare and all the rest of it. And we maybe gave Bournemouth half a millisecond of concern, but a good side beat a slightly less good side by playing good football. I'm not going to go too nuts over that.
No, I think that's a pretty fair assessment. I think I sort of felt from the game that Bournemouth were head and shoulders above us in terms of quality. You could see that the way they controlled the ball. We don't trust the stats, but they had 64% of possession, but it felt like they had a lot more. In my view, they sort of kept us at arm's length, and but for that mistake, really, where Tom Knowles forcing the mistake and Joe Quigley got his goal. That's always a bit of a highlight, isn't it? A goal against the odds. I think there'll be, you know, that's something that a lot of the fans who were in attendance will be able to take home with them, their celebrations. And it was in front of the Thatchers, which is always a plus for supporters. Yeah, I think you're pretty bang on there with that assessment. They were good. Marcondes was unbelievable. He just didn't stop running around. He was there everywhere, all over the pitch. He was an option. And, you know, he took his first goal. You know, he had a lot of time to pick his spot. But I thought his second one was different gravy. The build-up, the patient play from them, and then it sort of opened up. But like you said, we looked like a half-decent National League team playing a team that's 3 points clear at the Championship, and that difference was quite obvious. Dave, on your side, you know, you were commentating for Three Valleys. What was your assessment of what you saw?
Well, I thought it was sort of the epitome of the power of the cliche, because you hear a lot about Bournemouth being this really good footballing side. And sometimes when you watch football on the telly, you don't always get a real kind of understanding, I guess, as the casual viewer, of whether really good football is being played when you look at different styles up against one another. But actually looking at it in the flesh at Huish Park, I thought that some of their moves were just breathtaking, but breathtaking in the most simplistic way, that they didn't have to be too flash to sort of get in and around you. Obviously, you've got the gulf in, obviously, where they are in the league standings. But I was looking to try and find out exactly how many passes there were in Marcondes' second goal, because it must have been at least 20, 25 plus. And Yeovil just could not deal with the intricate passing that they were putting together. And even with the tight angle, I agree with you, Ian, it was probably his best finish out of the three of them. And Yeovil were just sort of, you know, if you were playing, I think I'd be standing there thinking, blimey, these are a good side, you know. I think there was a lot of talk about whether Scott Parker would change a lot of his squad around. I think a few of us were maybe thinking more in hope than expectation that, obviously, with where they are in the Championship, that they might go more youngsters. Difficult to kind of assess it, because I think quite a few youngsters have actually made their senior debuts in the Championship this season for Bournemouth. So some of those so-called youngsters have actually had quite a bit of experience in the team already this season. But I'd probably say, I don't know what you boys thought, but I thought the squad that Scott Parker put out, the 11 that started, I thought it was a bit half and half, really, for youngsters to sort of experience heads. And I think a lot of us were hoping that it might be those shitty little cherries that you get on top of cherry Bakewells, when we actually got some M&S glacé cherries, I think, that actually came down from Bournemouth, unfortunately for us. And you've just got to hold your hands up and say, do you know what? They played some exceptional football. I think the annoyance from myself is the fact that, with particularly with that first goal, it came from Mepham just hitting one over the top. And yes, it was a brilliant ball. And I was kind of hoping from where I was that there might have been a touch of offside about it. But then when you actually look back at it on the pictures, I mean, it was such a run from deep. I think he was onside by quite some margin, wasn't he? And a really good finish. So that was disappointing. But then, you know, that extra little bit of quality, it shows that they could mix it up when they needed to as well. And you just got to hold your hands up to that, really.
Without wishing to turn this into a Mark Condis love fest, watching him just in between the first and second goals of his, it's not about necessarily how much he runs, but how much he never literally stands still for 2 seconds. Sometimes it's only a couple of steps here and there, but in the build-up to the second goal, he was picking the ball up in front of his back four, so he was probably a concern of maybe one of the attacking players, maybe Quigley or Tom Knowles. Then he's suddenly in front of Josh Staunton trying to make a little pass, and Josh Staunton's thinking, hang on, what's this guy doing here? He's not my guy. Then suddenly he's pushing things on, but he's never really moving that far or that fast. But because he never stands still, it's almost like Scott Parker's decided to play with 10 men and just told Mark Condes just to also be there. Just crack on, do whatever you want, mate. And that must be so difficult. You've got experienced players, good players, Wilkinson, Staunton, Gorman, having to continually worry about, where's this extra guy? Is he mine? Is he someone else's? Have I got to tell someone else ready to go? And it's, for me, the first goal, Dan Moss is a little bit out of position. But actually, I've watched it back, and Dan Moss has got a winger to worry about, the winger he was probably expecting to worry about. And suddenly, Mark Condes is in between full-back and centre-back, and suddenly he's out of position thinking, oh, I've got to try and catch him up. And then the second goal, as you rightly say, Dave, it's neat, it's quick, it's really easy. But just before the killer blow of the pass, Mark Condes points. It's like he's 3 seconds ahead of everyone else. He points to say, I'm going there in a second or two. Can you put the ball there, please? It's put on a sixpence, and it's slid in behind the goalkeeper. We're going to talk about the goalkeeper, I'm sure. I don't think he covers himself in glory in the second goal, let alone the third. I was expecting him to... Kasper Schmeichel spread himself a little bit, like he did with another chance, actually, later on. But he feels like he almost curls up a bit, turns himself around a bit. I don't think the keeper covers himself in glory when you're at that angle. But all the credit to the way that Bournemouth played going forward. I thought it was quick and easy. And like you say, they knew how to mix it up. They knew how to soak up the early first 10 minutes. They did take some big crosses, some big long balls, and just head them away and deal with them and just get gritty for 10 minutes if they had to. They knew what they were doing. They knew how they were going to set up, and they knew what we were going to do. And fair play to them. That's what good teams do at the end of the day. And there was a few in there with points to prove, none less than Mark Condes, who's played about 10 minutes, I think, recently since the start of December-ish, or sort of over the Christmas period. He's barely played. He gets an opportunity and bang, takes it.
They also took some big hits in the opening 3 minutes with Dale Gorman's tackle. I think, you know, we all thought it was a pretty bad one, you know, up in the press box. It looked slightly dangerous, but the replays on the telly, I mean, you said in our WhatsApp chat, you and Dave both thought he was lucky to stay on the pitch after that tackle.
Before I say anything, Dave, you were obviously commentating. What was your instinct on that first challenge?
So we did think it was a pretty bad one, but unfortunately for us, in our glass ivory tower, as you touched on, Ian, we were actually the other side of it. And I just wondered if it's that old kind of adage of the fact that it was so early in the game, whether the referee felt that he couldn't possibly make that kind of decision so early. Because I can't remember how early it was, but it was certainly in the first couple of minutes, if not earlier than that, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Just checking there.
We've got it down as 3 on the website.
Flash course has two.
Minutes, I assume, as opposed to seconds. Yeah. Yeah. I suppose from Gorman's point of view, he was he's probably seen all the videos of Nathan Smith flying in when we played Manchester United, and he was doing his own version of the reducer, is it, that Martin Keogh not often refers to it as, but probably got it a little bit wrong there. But then with this kind of occasion as well, your adrenaline, the amount of fans that there were in the stadium. I'm just sort of giving him the excuses, really, because obviously we don't want to see a red card for one of the boys in green and white. And but maybe, yeah, possibly did get away with it a little bit.
I think he got away with it. I think he got away with it big time. He does play the ball, but almost with the foot that's on the floor. The lead foot, his right foot, is quite high. If that was the other way round, we'd be sat here saying Bournemouth should have been down to 10 men early doors without question. For me, it's a red card. I do wonder if it was a little bit, like you say, high adrenaline on Gorman's part. He wants to make an impression. We've got to start quick. He said it in his pre-match chat, didn't he? We've got to get at him quick. We've got to do what we do best, and that is start fast and try and ruffle some feathers. Well, he certainly did that, and he nearly paid the ultimate price in terms of being sent off. I think he probably should have done. I think the other yellow card early doors for Matty Worthington was a horrific decision. That's never a yellow card. It's a foul. At absolute worst, it's a don't do that again, mate. But never a yellow on its own. So inconsistencies from the official. We might even have a question about the officials. I haven't seen the questions yet. But yeah, I don't think he was a particularly impressive performer last night either.
Do you think, so my view is those two, you know, that's 66.6% of our midfield playing on a yellow card for the majority of the game, it sort of restricts them to in what they're able to do in those little moments where Bournemouth are, you know, like totally dominant in possession, where you might think, I can get away with a little trip here, I can get away with a little shirt tug there. I think that had an impact on how we were able to play, or do you think Bournemouth's control of the ball was so, you know, they were so dominant, it didn't make that big of a difference?
I think the fact that those yellow cards were so early gave that control to Bournemouth, because in that midfield then they could make the little passes, they could have quick breakaways after soaking up a couple of minutes of pressure, and suddenly two very key players weren't in the position to cause awkward fouls. Dale Gorman did make one more foul late on, and I mean,
it was a bit of a pull, wasn't it? A pull back in the first half.
That's a booking.
Yeah.
However you look at it, that's a classic take one for the team booking. And yeah, how Dale Gorman stayed on the pitch maybe twice is staggering. And I think it gave them the freedom. It gave Marcondes the chance to say, well, I can run around, do whatever I like, because two of them can't kick me now. And then Dan Moss goes in the book later on, suddenly three of them can't touch me. They can't go anywhere near me, because they did know how to play a little bit and hit the deck a bit early and break things up and bring things back to their pace. They're good at that. That's why they're good at what they do. So it definitely favoured them. But flip the coin, I can almost understand why we had to try and do that early doors. You weren't going to sit off and let them have the ball and let them ease into the game. You had to do that early. I don't think it was maybe quite nailed on, but I do understand the tactic behind it.
I know it's easy to kind of talk about the occasion when you look at the Yeovil players in terms of their exuberance, but I did feel that through some of the challenge, and particularly some of the yellow cards, like you said, Ben, we'll probably touch on the referee a little bit later, but I know the rules of the show, so whatever, you know, you say goes on that. But I did find, I think that, did you notice that some of the challenges were more lunges after Yeovil players had actually overran the ball a little bit, and then they were so exuberant to try and run it, win it back. There was a couple of times when you were sort of wincing at the challenges and hoping that that there wasn't going to be any bad ones in there. The referee, to be fair to him, I think there was a couple of times where Yeovil players did sort of not go over the top of the ball, but they were sort of chasing after their mistakes. And there was a couple of times the ref actually let it go, and Bournemouth had the advantage a couple of times. But unfortunately, from their point of view, it didn't actually come to anything. But I think there was some challenges in particular that you might not necessarily have seen if it wasn't for the game in front of the cameras and the magnitude of it for some of these players.
Do you think there's always a bit of an... maybe this is going to be our rule break and our referee discussion. Although I think the rule is we don't talk about National League refs because they're all rubbish, so we may be able to get away with this rule break and just, you know, this wasn't a National League ref. FA Cup games always tend to have an element of sort of loose officiating, I think. You know, you'd name Nathan Smith's horrific tackle on Alexis Sanchez when we played Manchester United. I can recall, I think when Arsenal played Sutton, there was a challenge on an Arsenal player that was like off the floor really high, and in the Premier League it would have definitely been a red card, but it was almost like that, oh, it's Saturn, it's non-league, you know, there's that whole, oh, these players aren't used to those types of tackles and they get away with that sort of thing. Do you think the referee had that in mind, or do you think he was a little bit just inconsistent? Because I thought Moss's yellow card was harsh. I thought there was a couple of decisions where, you know, he didn't have to give anything, but he gave a free kick to Bournemouth. There were these sort of 50-50 chance, 50-50, you know, moments where it could have gone either way or could have got nothing. I think when we played Stevenage, the referee let a lot of stuff go. There was a lot of situations where he didn't have to make a decision, so he didn't make a decision, whereas this official seemed to be a little bit more inclined to blow his whistle and get involved.
Oh, yeah, without question. He wasn't very good at all round. There were that Moss yellow card is not a yellow card, and yet there were decisions and tackles by both sets of players. I'm not going to sit here and give it the anti-Goval side here, but the far worse that should have been booked on both sides, notably Dale Gorman's second yellow, potentially. That was worse than what Dan Moss did. And then there was Dan Moss got booted in the head, about 6 foot in the air. Nothing. The handball on the line in the 90-12 minute. Nothing. It was bafflingly inconsistent for both ways. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he's the reason Yeovil lost, because he's not. But he was terrible.
I'm glad you brought up those points, actually, Ben, because I had Paul Thorpe with me doing Three Valleys. We were talking about the one where it was the high foot, but we weren't really sure what the rules are in that. And like, don't get me wrong, if you get smashed in the face, it's a definite free kick, regardless of if it's a high foot or not. But there's that argument that was it, like Paul was touching on, that whether it was a low header, if you will, therefore it wasn't a high foot from the attacker, but at the same time from the defender. But at the same time, if you're getting booted in the face, it's pretty much it's a foul, isn't it? There's no kind of way to address it as anything else. But as for that potential handball on the line at the end, I know a few people have been sort of saying, well, it wouldn't have made too much difference, but then you get an opportunity to get one, and then the referee might add some time on. So you've got one more chance to try and sort of lump it forward. Again, from where we were, we couldn't really see what had happened. But has it been quite conclusive that there was definitely more than a smidgen of handball in there? I was trying to catch it on the highlights on BBC, but I didn't see that particular piece of action on the highlights that I've seen, so I've not been able to see it again.
Me, it is. He kind of, the defender flops on the floor and blocks the Ruben Reed shot. I mean, it's a handball. It hits his arm. I mean, I don't understand what else it can be. The ref gives the full-time whistle. So, I mean, he might think it's a penalty, but the game officially ended between Ruben Reed's foot making contact and the defender's arm making contact, which means he would have blown up for full time had it gone in, and we'd have still lost 3-1. It just didn't really add up. I think it was just an awkward way of finishing. Didn't need to finish like that. I hate it when the refs blow the full time whistle when the ball's in the 6-yard box. That makes no sense to me. You have to let a play run out. You have to let the ball just either move into a neutral area or just go out of play or something. You're just going to unnecessarily rile people up. And we saw it at the end, and I did have Grant Smith flashbacks. I was just saying to myself, shut up, Wilkinson, shut up. Don't say anything. And three or four of the guys rallied around the ref, and you just think, shut up. We've missed Grant Smith for 2 games. Don't do anything stupid here. Just walk away and moan about it on the podcast on Sunday night.
Yeah, I've got a shot. I don't know if you've seen the pictures, Ben. I've got a picture of that moment unfolding, and there's a picture of Ruben Reed, and he's swinging his left foot, and it's like he's got so much of the goal to aim for. Like, if he gets that up and off the floor, it doesn't happen. And we go home with a little bit more of a happier end of the game in that we've scored, and it would have just been nice to have had that extra moment just to round the game off. Even if we lose, it's a goal in front of the Thatchers, and, you know, 3-2 is better than 3-1, isn't it? But let's talk about the
and
goal.
And for him as well.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing. I mean, as soon as it happened, you saw Ruben Reed grab the ball. He was taking the penalty.
Yeah.
He almost grabbed the ball before the ref had even made the decision. It was just a penalty. He grabbed the ball. He was taking it. He needs that first goal. And no, it's not going to make a difference to the game. And, you know, fine. But what if Ruben Reed scored that penalty, felt good, goes on and scores one Tuesday night and goes on and moves on and becomes that striker we know it can be? It has knock-on effects. And these things do matter, so to speak. So that was disappointing. A few other things were disappointing. Darren Sarr mentioned last week, didn't he, that he listed the ref as being quite poor in his post-match records. Well, I would hazard a guess he's done something similar this time.
Yeah, and I think let's just get away from the disappointment. Let's talk about the goal. Joe Quigley got his goal against the team he started at. Great work from Tom Knowles to press the keeper. And a nice, simple finish, but a hell of a moment for Joe Quigley. And Ben, another situation here where have you caught this? Did you predict this on the podcast?
Correct.
Yeah, it was nice to see a packed Thatcher's Terrace become unglued at that moment. It is, you know, it's those moments that you, I don't know, I remember from when I was a kid, these moments of goals being scored and just sheer jubilation. So, you know, you'd like to think there was a few kids in the crowd who really soaked in that moment and are going to be dragging their parents to Needham Market on Saturday.
it was the perfect goal, I think, from a fan's perspective. In, you know, you can look at the definite quality between the two sides, but there's undoubtedly what Yeovil could match them for would be effort, closing down, and of course, obviously having the 7,500 or 5,000 or so, obviously, which is Yeovil supporters, cheering them on and helping with that press and that kind of approach to the game. And then when you get the closing down, and the closing down then pays off, and then you get the nice tap in, it was like all of those elements all came together at that one moment. And I mean, how do you like him for Joe Quigley? I mean, that's happy days.
After everything he's been through as well, he's not had it easy. He had to lead the line by himself for the first 10 games and did really quite admirably, and then had to sit out injured, unavailable, whilst we were going through those FA Cup games. He obviously missed that penalty at Weymouth. Imagine how different things would have been if he'd have scored that penalty at Weymouth. It would have been so, so easy. But maybe we wouldn't have gone on the run. Maybe we wouldn't have had to fight back and come back into it. And he obviously then missed out on, I think he missed out on Yate and Stevenage, possibly. And then comes back and gets his moment against his former club. He's been injured. He's been in and out the side. And it's interesting that you've got three candidates probably for one role there. Well, he's given himself the first nod, and he might have bought himself an extra start on Tuesday night by scoring a nice, easy tap in. So big for Joe Quigley, big for the club, big for the team. Very synonymous, a very Yeovil goal. Work, Harry, get into people's faces, make other people make errors and try and take advantage. So great to see the Thatchers go up like that. And it did give us belief, didn't it? With such a long time to go in that second half, the longer it stayed at 2-1, the longer we were still in the game.
Yeah, and that sort of brings us to a point where we can talk about that third goal and maybe talk about our lonely keeper, Dylan Barnes. Performances, that one was sort of, you know, I'm not a goalkeeper, obviously, but, you know, you push it away from the goal, push it wide of the goal, and it seems to go, you know, pretty central, right in front of the goal, to the feet of a incoming Bournemouth player who, you know, doesn't have a lot to do to put it away, but it
almost anywhere but there, really.
yeah.
It's one of those, wasn't it?
It felt to me, you know, the Torquay game, I gave him the benefit of the doubt until I'd seen the angle on social media of the Torquay supporters on that corner. And then the performance last night wasn't spectacular. He made one good save from low. I think it was low. What do we make of Dylan Barnes and his brief spell in green?
Can I take this, Ben?
By all means. By all means.
So it's difficult, I think, with two games. And I can't work out if I'm being extremely harsh or that's just the reality of what the situation is. Because I guess, obviously, we all know that if you're a goalkeeper, you're only really as good as your last mistake, aren't you, really? Because it's your mistake that obviously is what's going to be remembered and then obviously cost your team. But I guess what I could compare it to is like, it's like watching a Mr. Bean sketch with him. And when you watch Mr. Bean, when he's doing something right, like he's making a cake or something, and you're like, oh, he's making a cake, he's done it right. But then you know that cake is going to fall on the floor at some point, and then you're like, ah, yeah, it's still Mr. Bean. And that was what happened with Dylan Barnes, because if you remember in the Torquay game, I seem to remember him making at least one really key save at an important moment. I think it might have even been before it then leaped over his head and went behind him.
Yeah, I think and, you're right.
The same happened in the Bournemouth game. I think it was Lowe that went through, stood up strong. You talk about the Schmeichel stance. He pretty much did what he needed to do at that point. A really good save. And then, like you say, when it actually came to that other moment of the Mr. Bean dropping the cake, there it was. And Macondes, he says, hey, how do you like him? And 3-1. And you can only really judge him on the mistakes, I guess, and just wasn't good enough.
I think his performance is the only element of what if that remains. If we're 2-1 at 70 minutes when he scores, that's okay. But 70 minutes becomes 80 minutes, and suddenly you're chucking on Ruben Reid at 2-1, not 3-1. Suddenly you're chucking on strikers. Suddenly you're sticking Luke Wilkinson up top and you're starting to lump balls into the box. You're putting pressure on their keeper who's already made one gaffe, who will feel the pressure. And there's always that maybe. There's always the maybe. There's always the ball that drops nicely after a headed clearance. Dale Gorman thunders one in finally from 40 yards. There's always that what if at 3-1, sucker punch, back to square one that you were back to a minute or two ago. Game over. Game almost peters out at that point, and Yeovil then have to go in to force it. Same with the Torquay one. We're 1-0 up. We've just scored an absolute worldie 8 minutes before. We're on top of the world. We've turned around the performance from Boxing Day. This is incredible. See this out. Don't do anything stupid like, I don't know, punch the ball into your own friggin' net. Like, he's not a bad goalkeeper. He plays for QPR. He's played whatever many dozens and dozens and dozens of EFL games. He's not a bad goalkeeper. And I'm not going to sit here and say he's a bad goalkeeper. I'm going to say he's made two match-defining errors.
Yeah.
Which is rough. And
when you're only here for 28 days as well, or whatever it is.
It's not going to be 28 days.
No, exactly. And what are you thinking if you're Max Evans, by the way?
So, I thought about this long and hard, and I get it. I get why we went with Aloney. I was Team Max. I think we should have gone with Max.
Yeah.
And I said that before, but I get why we're doing it. Because if those two exact two errors, those two games play out in exactly the same way, but you swap Barnes for Evans, and Evans punches the ball in the back of his own net, and then Evans rolls the ball to Marcondes for his hat-trick goal, that might cause some long-term problems. Maybe I'm not good enough at this level. Maybe I'm not going to get another chance. Maybe I don't play against Needham Market. Maybe I don't play Somerset Premier Cup games. Maybe the under-18 keeper is going to have to start coming in and getting involved. I get that. I get that, and I get the importance of these games meant we needed some been-there-done-that experience. But hindsight's 2020, isn't it?
Yeah,
definitely feel like we should have gone with Max Evans. Now maybe there were elements of did our defense trust him in the same way they trust Smith, in the same way they've trust Evans through working with him? If we've had a rough week where we've not been able to train very much, we've not had full lists there, we had 12 players on Thursday or 12 players on Friday, and suddenly, you know, has he had that build up? Has he had that 6 months of day in, day out, match day experience that Evans has had? Probably not. And those are conditions and contexts that you can't really do anything about. But yeah, that's my only what if. What if we're 2-1 instead of 3-1 with 5 minutes to go and we just start launching the ball forward? And unfortunately, Dylan Barnes will go down as a as a footnote in this football club season, or someone said on social media as a quiz question for Dave on one of his quizzes in the near future. And he probably will do, unfortunately. He'll be fine. He'll probably have another loan spell somewhere. He might even get into the QPR team and do absolutely fine. But his last couple of games at Huish Park, he got sent off for Colchester against us when he was last here, punched the ball back into his own net, and gifted Bournemouth a place in the fourth round. Thanks, mate. But we're done.
I think there was a moment where, you know, at the press conference before the Torquay game, I asked Luke Wilkinson about how they were feeling about not having Grant Smith and how there was going to be a different goalkeeper in behind them. And he sort of said how they were used to working with Max Evans, the way they train, Max Evans is involved with them. They just felt that it was going to be an element of, you know, coaching him through it and leading him through it. And I do think, you know, hindsight is 2020, as we say, and we have the benefit of that now. But I think those experiences for him, you know, it would have been good. You know, it might not have, we may have still lost. He may have done something, but he's ours. He's our keeper, and we would have been able to get through that. I think when when Darren Sarve said he was bringing in, he was looking at bringing in someone. I don't know. I feel like maybe it's a bit of a reality check as to
it's
what
interesting
we are,
you mentioned,
but I thought we'd have more than a 25-year-old, you know, more than a 25-year-old keeper from QPR who's, you know, not played a great deal. I don't know. It's a shame. It is what it is. Grant Smith's going to have to take a little look at himself, isn't he, and think what he's missed out on these last, you know, 180 minutes of football he's missed out on could have had significant, you know, differences to our season. And I think just from an occasion standpoint, for him to miss out on a third round against top of the Championship club in front of our biggest crowd since 2018, what an opportunity he's missed just by having a go at a referee after the final whistle's gone.
Especially after the FA Cup he's had. Weymouth and Shagger Hips and then Stevenage and his incredible performance at Stevenage. Let's not forget that. He was outstanding at Stevenage. Mm-hmm. I hope he and Max Evans have two really big games coming up. We assume Smith is straight back in for Southend. I would be disappointed if he's not. And we think Max Evans will get the go against Needham Market. I would love them both to put in performances that say, from Smith, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done it. Here's a clean sheet for you. And Max Evans goes and gets a clean sheet against Needham Market, pulls off a couple of worldies and says, told you I should have played against them. And, you know, everyone moves on from that point. So two clean sheets for two different goalkeepers, and we all move on from this sorry hold affair.
Yeah, I think you're right. Should we move on to some questions? We've had quite a few.
Have we got a question on Southend? Because I feel like we do need to look forward a little bit.
We do,
about Southend.
Yeah.
Well, let's do that.
The ever-reliable Andy Cleave has asked us a Southend question. Looking ahead to Southend on Tuesday, what would your starting 11 be, assuming everyone is fit and available? Interested to know who'd start up top. And he's also kind of answered the question a little bit by himself. Surely Barnett back at left back too.
So we don't quite know sort of who was missing and who was unavailable, but the people missing from the entire squad, were there any?
We named nine subs. No.
I was going to say, when I was looking at the subs, it was like, wow, this is a full celebration tin here, isn't there? You've got everything.
Who's the toffee penny?
Yeah, who was the goalkeeper? Dylan Barnes was the toffee penny.
There was no Ollie Haste. There you go. He's the one missing.
Okay.
But Jack Robinson didn't get on, so I wouldn't necessarily agree immediately that we have Barnett at left back. I quite like Barnett further forward. If we can accommodate him on that left side with a bit of balance on the right side in some way, shape or form, I quite like him further forward. I don't mind it at all. When I saw the first team news and we were talking about it, I went, is he up front? Is he the other side? They gone that far.
Are you going Robinson left back then, Ben, if you want
I think so. I mean, Jaheim Headley, I think his loan's like going to peter out into nothing. That's him done, I think. I think so. I want to go back to the solidity that we saw at Solihull. And so I would almost copy that team, actually, in that 0-0 draw. It was scrappy. It was tough. It was difficult to break down. But I think it was what we need to show now. After what is three losses in a row now, we've conceded a few goals. Let's go back to doing what we did best. And for that game, it was Robinson at left back with Barnett in midfield. And so I think I like Barnett, but I think I'm starting Robinson just to provide that extra bit of solidity in defence.
Does that mean you're starting Adi Youssef if you're going to go to Solihull?
No, I'm starting with Joe Quigley. I'm just going to mute my microphone, I think. My son is trying to walk into my office room. 2 seconds. Talk amongst yourselves.
So, oh, yeah. I better throw in who I'd start up front then, had I?
Well, yeah, I was disappointed not to see Charlie Wakefield. But obviously after the match, the manager said Charlie Wakefield's not been very well and hasn't been able to train properly. But I think for me, I love that combination of Wakefield and Knowles either side of a striker. I think Quigley's done enough to...
Even when Wakefield had been playing right up top as well, I think that kind of worked quite well because he's got such a good engine. It doesn't really matter sort of where you put him to. And I think he does seem to have a really good understanding with Quigley in particular. But like you touch on with the Yeovil of yesteryear, they've been most exciting when they've had really exciting wingers. And then Knowles and Wakefield, I mean, they kind of pit themselves, don't they, if you want to use those two down the flanks.
I think they do, but it's just whether the manager wants to bring Sonny back in, doesn't he? Sonny's been getting picked over Tom Knowles as of late, up until his red card. So I think, I think Quigley's got to go in up front again for a start. And then, either side, I just like seeing, Tom Knowles don't fall in love with footballers. And, Charlie Wakefield, he's on his way to being in that category. If he can do some, score some more goals like he's done against Weymouth and Stevenage, he's up there.
To be honest, it's just nice to be able to answer that question with other people. So for a long time, we haven't really been able to say who's going to start at left back, who are we gonna have down the wing, who's going to play up front. It's just been a case of, Quigley starts because he has to.
That's all we got.
Yeah, exactly. So all of a sudden, it's nice just to be able to have that discussion, really.
Back, by the way, it wasn't my son. It was my wife delivering Chinese trinkets of food. I've got spring rolls.
Nice.
I've got yakitoris. And I've got what appears to be a crumpet with some beef on.
Am I being Chinese illiterate now? What's a yakitori?
It is chicken on a stick.
Oh. Yeah, I can get behind that.
Very nice food. I've been listening in. I do love this idea of we've got such a small squad. We've got genuine options. We've got four people that can play a left back. Alex Bradley can't get a kick. We've got three goalkeepers to choose from. We've got three genuine strikers to choose from. Get Lawson Diaz to strap his boots on, and suddenly we've got genuine four wide options. I mean, there's a lot going on for a team with no players, isn't there?
Yeah. We know why you want Lawson back on the pitch, right?
Just to get him back up that list. One more step.
Yeah, I mean, I think the left-back discussion's an interesting one. Some people will say interesting is definitely the wrong word. But Morgan Williams, do you think his time at left back is up a little bit? We've got options there, and you know me, I like symmetry. I want a left footer at left back. I want a left back at left back.
It's a difficult one with Williams, I think, because we've now seen him, what, left back, centre back, right back. And because he hasn't, you know, up until this point, been a regular starter, I think it can be a little bit detrimental when you've got somebody who is able to sort of play anywhere. I mean, you know, he's, I was going to say, maybe not as a bad example, I was going to say he's almost like the Phil Neville of Yeovil Town, isn't he, in many ways, because he can play in those particular positions. But whether you've actually got that master of a trade or you just sort of fill in, I know that particularly in the National League level, a lot of managers rely on players playing in different positions. But when you can't quite nail a place down, I'm not quite sure if that actually plays to your advantage. Not sure.
If Morgan Williams is Phil Neville, does that make Dylan Barnes Massimo Taibbi?
I'm all for these 90s Premier League references. Or was it early 2000s Taibbi, probably, wasn't it?
So was that the Matt Le Tissier through the legs one?
Yeah, it was.
Was it that one?
Yeah. Yeah. Early naughty. Yeah, topical. Yeah, early naughty. Right, on to the next question. Debs Curtis, who's at fault when it comes to the Huish Park matchday experience? Reports of extremely old posters hanging up around the ground and still no hot water in the Screwfix toilets.
I feel like we've done this to death, haven't we, lads? So can I, Debs, I really appreciate the question. It's a great question, but probably not one that we can and maybe should answer. There are other people who should be answering things like that. So I'm gonna twist that question. You lads have been there quite a bit over the last couple of weeks, months, seasons. I want you to imagine that actually we've had to switch the South End game on Tuesday to home rather than away. What changes do you think the club can make by the time this goes live on 8 a.m. on Monday morning, between that point and kickoff of our now home game against South End United? So you can't be doing planning permissions and you can't be spending millions of money because we haven't got it. What changes do you think that can be made quite quickly, quite easily in that short period of time that will make the matchday experience better for all those concerned in as many areas as you want? You two have been there. Dave, fire some things off. Within reason, you can't go and pluck millions of pounds out of thin air.
It's funny you should say that because Paul Thorpe was having the discussion with me on air, in fact, saying what he would do if he had £1 million to take over Yeovil. And he was talking about penalty shootout competitions where the cash was actually attached to the net where you have to hit the ball. So maybe that's not something that we can do by Tuesday. But we used to do more for particularly focusing on the children. Didn't we have the like a play zone type thing not that long ago? That seemed to be really successful at the time. It used to be quite busy when you had a couple of the players that were able to come by, obviously that weren't available in the squad, and they were able to do sort of different challenges and bits and pieces, a bit of a Q&A and signatures to you know, selfies, all that kind of stuff that goes on. Even just little things like that, I would imagine, doesn't really take a lot of putting together, I wouldn't have thought. You've got an area, at the end of the day, you don't really need too much to be there because people just want access to the players. That's what they want. It's a community club. It's a club at a level where the players shouldn't necessarily be, you know, out of touch with the community like you do at the sort of Premier League level. So I think there's certainly things like that and possibly halftime competitions and bits and pieces, maybe not cash hanging down from a goalpost or, you know, winning Ford Focus or something, but you can certainly do little competitions and things just as sort of a short term kind of solution before you can then maybe start to think of what you can do sort of longer term.
I think there might be sort of maybe COVID implications and bits and pieces for that, but one thing I think we've got is a fantastic community team that would the guys at the Community Sports Trust and the stuff that they can do, if given the, not quite necessarily an empty checkbook or anything like that, but just told to do what they do, that's what they're so damn good at. And I do feel like that. Ian, a little bit more than practical stuff then, around the ground, physically, how are you tidying up? What are you doing? Where are you taking your dustpan and brush to?
two things. Maybe more, it may end up in more than two things. One, the easiest win is to tell everyone to wear their welly boots to matches. Because there is so much water everywhere, from the car park all the way around the concourse, if you can call it a concourse. Just mud, sludge, water, swamp, everywhere.
Have we got any in the club shop?
There's an opportunity. There is an opportunity.
You are welcome.
We've got to be the only club who could end up getting a game postponed because the ground is waterlogged.
Yeah, the outside.
The outside, I mean, yeah.
Option two, our esteemed owner, who decided he could find Yeovil at the weekend, could put out a statement on Monday morning to say, right, I'm selling the club. This seven-day nonsense is over. I am selling the club. That then is followed by a statement from new owners who then say, right, help us. Let's do this. We know you know, whatever, fans don't want to do, you know, I don't think fans are willing to, you know, spend their time or their money supporting the current owner. A new owner comes in and says, right, I'm doing this. We need your help. How many people do you think are going to run to Shearers Park because they feel involved and they, you know, want to help someone who's actually going to appreciate it? I mean, I don't necessarily think, you know, I don't think you'd have hundreds of people, but I think you'd have some people who think, yeah, right, I am going to muck in. I believe in this. I believe in this vision. I'm sick of it. Let's go. And I'm willing to do it for you, but I wasn't willing to do it for the bloke before he comes when we're on telly and we've got 8,000 people there and the BBC are in town.
It's a real shame, isn't it? We know we've had the emails, we've had the messages, we've seen the social media posts. We know that there are people, not just one-off people, but people who have companies who have sponsorship availability that have simply said, we're not doing anything yet. We're not doing it. We're not going to help out. We're not going to put our company's name on something yet. So that stuff is so, so frustrating. We've seen the stories about the stuff behind the terraces being just basically a sludge fest, and you know the £3.50 cans of Thatcher's cider that were being sold by two kids who didn't know how to work the change out and stuff like that. It's those are the things that are difficult. There must be other easy wins there. I'm sure Yeovil fans are listening to this thinking, hang on, what about just simply taking down a poster that was out of date with the person's name on it that doesn't even work at the club anymore? Because you don't contact Dave Linney for marketing opportunities anymore, like the poster says in the toilet. Mm. He's gone.
What about a card machine, Ben?
A what?
A card machine.
To take payments electronically?
You'd think that, it ain't gonna catch on, mate. Say that maybe that might be something that they can, you know, where people are able to sort of, you know, pay contactless maybe. No. Just throwing it out there.
Nah, never catch on, mate.
I mean, I think, you know, a higher aspiration is probably hot water than let's get hot water in the toilets before we get contactless.
I said realistic.
Yeah, I know you're not going to get a plumber out in this time.
Where are you plucking these crazy facet things out of thin air from? Unbelievable.
And I don't know about the other toilets, but I know when I go to the loo and I go to get some hand sanitizer out because it's hot water. There's no hot water, so what's the point in freezing your hands? Go to get some hand sanitizer, and the ones inside the toilets are empty. So I then go out and use the. Remember that company that sponsored us in the middle of the pandemic, where they were like, "All your sanitizing needs." They've got these push pedal things outside that use them instead. But it's just another thing every time. How many people have touched that filthy sanitizer and not got anything out of it? Like, and it, you know, it hands tied behind their back all the time. That's what you think about. Hands tied behind their back. Everyone within that club, from the football side to the not football side, But some things are taking a poster down. It's hard. It isn't hard. Surely there's a drill somewhere. If anything's attached to the wall, surely there is a drill somewhere at a football club where someone can just go and unscrew something. And I don't know. But if, you know, if you're that demoralised, if you're that nervous about your situation because, you know, we don't know if we're going to have a job, you know, if you don't know what's going on and you're that out of the loop with the situation or not communicated with, or you just don't like your boss, why are you going to go, why are you going to go that extra, you know, extra mile?
Especially if there's only, what do we think, 3-4 full-time members of staff outside of the football team? I mean, yeah, those are the wins. And, you know, all of the responsibilities to try and get back to Deb's question do all point to the very top.
That's a very good point. I think we've answered that question, Deb.
Yeah, there's a couple of, there's one from Jerry Jenner.
Oh, Ian, just quickly, I'd like to offer an apology to Debs as well, because I spoke to her after the game on at the weekend, and I thought her name was Gemma, and she said no, because it's not her name. Apologies, Debs. Sorry about that.
She said no.
Let's move on.
Yeah, there's a question from Jerry Chinnock as well. We won't answer this, Jerry, but I'll just read it out because it's your question says quite a lot. How embarrassing is it that there was 7,800 fans there and one converted caravan at the back of the Thatcher stand selling £3.50 cans of Thatchers with two people serving? Why not open the tent or get something more suitable? Maybe fans would spend more money at the club.
Yeah, you're right. We can't really answer that. But to be fair, Joey Chinnock does make a valid point, doesn't it?
Brilliant. Dan Johnson asks, are high foot at head level, high feet, that should be, Dan, come on, are high feet no longer a foul? No.
Not if your name's Jez and you referee the FA Cup for the round games at Yeovil, apparently not.
This is the point that Thorpey was making, that you see it a lot these days, where if the head goes in low, is it a high foot by the letter of the law? But then, you know, obviously if you do catch your opponent, then obviously it should be a foul and potentially a card of some description. But you do sometimes look at some of these matchups that go on, you do sometimes think, actually, the attacker there has actually gone in very low with his head, somewhat almost you would expect to be on the receiving end of quite a battering if you go in that low.
I he's think invited a kick to the head there.
Yeah, very much so.
If anything, he's headed his boot.
It's like that moment, you know, the playoff final where Marcus Stewart does a diving header and he just fucking lamped it with his left foot.
But players do it a lot. You see it so much that they go so low and you think, why have you gone for that decision?
But in this particular instance, I will say Dan Moss getting kicked in the head, probably a foul. Yes.
A few questions from Watsy. I think we've already answered a lot of these. Did we get it wrong with Barnes?
Yes.
Is it time to play a proper left back? One of our players of the season at left back. Don't know who he's talking about there. Yeah, well, he wants to move Jordan Barnett to left back.
Well, I still think that Jack Robinson is one of our players of the season so far. So both applies.
Should we resort to a 4-4-2?
No.
Dave?
No, I quite like the 4-3-3 formation, to be honest. But hey, why not do 4-2-2-2? Because apparently that's working in the rage at the moment.
Well, that's sort of what we used to do a little bit. The diamond was sometimes a bit more of a square than a diamond. I don't know. I like 4-3-3. I think it gets the best out of Knowles. I think it gets the best out of Charlie Wakefield. I'm also not sure we've got strikers who may complement each other. We haven't got Little and Large. We ain't got, you know, Ruben Reed and Reece Murphy last season. That spell when they were partnered together was great. We haven't got James Hayter or Paddy Madden
at all. Just throwing it out there.
They laugh at me every week when I suggest the potential of wingbacks. Every week they laugh at me.
Hey, Barnett can definitely be our Robertson.
I don't know who that is.
Definitely.
I mean, whenever we've played three at the back under Darren Sile, it has not worked.
That's fair.
I think
probably a fair comment.
I think, I don't know, it feels like our back four is always going to be our best balance. I think if we move to a back three, who do we play wing back? Because I don't think Moss is a wing back. I think Moss is a better right back than he just shoving him in at wing back or shoving him in at right centre back.
And I guess also with a three at the back, you're likely to then have a strike partnerships. And could you see Quigley and Reed together, for example?
No. And what happens to everything else then? What happens to your midfield? What happens, you know, do you go with two? Where does Josh Staunton fit in this? Do you move Josh Staunton to centre back and then lose what he gives us in midfield? Like there's too many ramifications from changing from a back four, in my view. I think it gives us more fluidity and more options further up the pitch if we play a back four.
I only ask that because I've just downloaded Football Manager and I'm probably going to start with Yeovil and look at a couple of formations. So maybe I'll rule that one out straight away then.
Well, I wish you luck with that.
The key to our defensive success this season has been that five, hasn't it? It's been Smith in the four, Moss, Hunt, Wilkinson, and then a varying choice of left backs. But that's been the key to our defensive success. Yeah. You cannot move away from that back four. In front of it, you've probably got a little bit more flexibility, but it served us so far so good that back four has to go and stay as it is.
Can I just say, I thought Max Hunt was excellent. I don't know how it came across on TV, but I thought he did a couple of nice little turns where he sold
a couple of drops of the shoulder. Yeah,
I thought he was. Yeah, I thought he looked very assured, and yeah, I enjoyed his performance.
He's got to keep an eye on a certain Mr. Murphy on Tuesday night as well, so I'm glad he's feeling good.
Yeah. Question from Harry Eaton. Without breaking rule one, which we've already done, what will happen first? We get decent refs in a match, or Scott releases his next half-yearly press statement?
Oh,
it's 5-6 each of two, isn't it? I don't know who the ref is for Tuesday night. I'll have to look at the ref list, but yeah.
Yeah. There's more chance of us having a good ref on Tuesday than there is a statement, I think.
Yeah, we're going to have more opportunities of referees before we hear. So whether or not the referees are any good or not is up for debate.
He just needs a poke, doesn't he? Then he feels the need to bash out a 1,500-word legible statement. maybe he'll listen to this and that'll be enough.
He's the only one that doesn't listen to
this. The only Don't one, worry about that. Yeah, Adam Barrington. I think we've probably discussed this. What are your thoughts on Grant Smith's suspension impact on the last two games? Could results have been any different? We think they may have been. I think so. Yeah. And expectations for the South End game.
Can I say I'm a little teeny tiny bit concerned about the South End game? About having a little bit of after the Lord Mayor's show, all the razzmatazz, all the sort of TV stuff, having the cameras there and all the rest of it, and having that big performance and having to psych yourself up to play against the big boys, and then someone called Reese Murphy is going to play up front against you. There's a lad at the back called Nathan Ralph. What kind of name is that?
Who has two first names, eh?
I know. Who does that? There is a teeny tiny bit of a concern. That being said, Southend are not amazing. It's worth noting. They only just scraped past the Seagull Botherers at the weekend. They only just scraped past Dorking Wanderers in the FA Trophy. They haven't got great wins. They did draw away at Bromley, and that's probably the most creditable recent performance. But in terms of form, I'm quite okay with playing a side that have got less points than they have played games.
Do you think, Ben, there's something in the fact that because it's Southend United and the name Southend, like apart when you say that you look at the form, we probably should be going there thinking we can absolutely take 3 points here. But the name Southend, sometimes you might think maybe their fortunes are, they have to turn around at some point. And maybe there is a team there. Obviously, they've had their financial troubles, etc. But are we expecting them to be where they are now come the end of the season? I don't know.
Not with Reece Murphy up front, you wouldn't have thought. I feel like...
To be fair, I'm just looking around now. I think Reece Murphy's been playing left wing.
What?
I think I'm just looking at some formations. I've no idea how correct these formations are, but by the look of it, he's playing left wing.
Surely not.
But I mean, they've scored less goals than us.
Yeah.
And there aren't many teams that can... Yeah, we've conceded considerably less than them. If you look at numbers on a page, we win that easy. No problem at all. Our away form is really good. Their home form is pretty crap. I have no concerns about us going there and winning. Might be a bit scrappy, might be a bit horrible, but we win. Easy. No problem at all. But there's that little nagging feeling of, I don't know, we've lost three now, little tiny bit of pressure. They'll want to get that feeling of a win. It might not be easy. It might be 0-0 for a long period of time. It might be difficult to get up for it. They probably had a huge adrenaline that night. Sunday was probably a difficult day. Monday's the only day of prep, of training and the rest of it. And suddenly, bang, Tuesday, in a coach, off to Southend. It's not easy. That's not going to be easy. So it's going to be a big test for them, if not necessarily in terms of opposition.
I'd have loved for us to have had to play Needham Market next.
Yeah, me too.
That would have been a nice recovery, a week of 5 free days or whatever. And then into a game that, you know, It should be an easy one for us. I don't want to understate Needham Market, but we should be smashing. If we beat Woking 3-1, we should be doubling that at least against a team of that.
Well, it's a complete change, isn't it, from this weekend, where you could argue that this weekend was our cup final and next weekend it's theirs, I suppose, in many ways. But like you say, with you would definitely be looking at, even with changes, that you'd be expecting a good win in that one.
Yeah, yeah. And I think also, let's just note on the Southend game that the ticketing is shitty and you have to turn upon the day and pay £2 extra because they're not offering their reduced price or tickets before the day, which is just a slap in the face, a Tuesday night game. And forcing people to pay more. I think 20 quid is more than enough to go and watch National League football as an away supporter. There's this whole 20's plenty campaign which applies to the Premier League. A bit shit, but you know, their owner is what he is, and seems to be
a theme there.
yeah, the battle of the shit owners. A question from Andrew Foote. With our decent cup run now at an end, what do we need to do in the league and trophy for this to be considered a good season? With current off-field issues, would a mid-table finish be a relative success?
Win them all.
Mid-table's fine with a trophy win.
Oh, is it? 12th okay with a trophy win.
12th and a trophy's okay, isn't it?
12th okay?
Well,
I'm not having 12th is okay from where we are right now.
Yeah, but you know, let's think about that trophy for a second.
Oh, I still want that. I still want the damn Somerset Premier Cup. But I'm not having 12th.
Even with a trophy?
Two trophies and a 12th?
A double, a cup double.
And a double. I want the cup double anyway. I really
do. When you look at the FA Trophy, am I right in thinking that last season there wasn't anyone from the National League actually in the FA Trophy final? It was
Concord Rangers versus... I can't remember who they played. Lewis Simper played. Pass. Oh, wasn't it not Notts County? Was it not Notts County or Harrogate? And they'd been like promoted because of the delays. Can't remember.
Did they play it like afterwards? I'm sure there was two teams that you wouldn't expect to get to to the FA Trophy final, which just made me think, well, if they're there, then we can certainly be, get there.
What year is it? We're 2022 now. It was 2021.
I think Ben makes a good point. I think there was,
it was Hereford
situation
versus,
where it went, yes.
Hereford versus right. Hornchurch.
There you go.
And it was 3-1 to Hornchurch. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a... I think I get why Ben feels the way he feels. But I think in the context of our current situation, where we have an owner who is seemingly, we don't know, but seemingly cutting his losses and he is not putting anything in. Like, I don't see, you know, he's not at games. Why would he be putting any expense into it, you know, a few months after taking out a 900 grand loan from Sport England? I think the context of that, if you know, nothing changes, which we're all extremely hopeful and optimistic that it will, if nothing changes, I'll take mid-table. I don't think we're reaching don't go down, don't go bust territory, but if, you know, if anything falls through, if a takeover falls through, we probably are in don't go down, don't go bust territory, unless all of a sudden, through the kindness of his heart, he decides, actually, you know what, I will lead this club into the promised land, because I know what to do. I've got a long-term plan.
I still want to be within touching distance of the playoffs. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, so do I.
For me, a successful season, I want to win the trophy. I think we should really try and win the trophy. And I think we need to keep the playoff dream alive as long as we can. We're 7 points off now. We're not exactly next door. Like, it's fine that we are within, but we all think that with another good run, we can do it. And so that's all I want. I just want to keep that hope alive. I don't want to give up and just accept 12th.
It's that kind of league, though, isn't it? Where you can be 16th and still probably about 4 points off the playoffs. Like, yeah. That's the congested nature of it. But I do take your point that, you know, when you want to look at the lofty of ambitions of where we, you know, we've had a taste of it for a long time now. So there's no reason why we shouldn't think we're not capable, certainly with the starting 11 that we can put together.
And I said
we need to
go on, Ben.
If you offered me a choice of 12th in the trophy or the heartbreak of missing out on the final day on goal difference and finishing 8th, I'd take it, because it kept us going for that longer period of time. That's what I want. I want the feeling of we can. And if the hope kills me, so be it.
All right. Fair enough. what was I going to say? I had something so poignant and important that's just totally gone from my brain. Maybe it will come back. Maybe it won't. But listeners should know that it was, you know,
just probably, tweet it afterwards, it'll be fine.
It was probably the greatest thought I've ever had. Mark Swatridge asks, what do we think about the chance of Bournemouth get battered, insert team name here, get battered, Adda Yusuf and the chant around Adda Yusuf, and there was a chant about, I think it was a chant about Scott Parker being a sex offender, which was just... stupid. So, what do we think about the chance? I personally, I think the get battered one is appropriate when you're battering a team. Not when you're drawing with Torquay or losing to Bournemouth. I think the Adda Yusuf one is unacceptable. And I don't like it. And I think, I'd like to think, if someone of authority was running the football club, they would maybe say something about that type of chant and perhaps say it's not particularly appropriate. And chanting anything about sex offenders is stupid, ignorant, and just not a part of what going to watch football should be. And
Don't really have much to add to that, to be honest, mate. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I think what's worse as well is obviously when you get quite a few younger people there, and particularly that they then pick things up there because there's a catchy tune or whatever, and then they don't actually necessarily realise the words that they're saying, yeah. Which is an even bigger issue.
Yeah.
Again, I can't really add an awful lot. There are so many better things to chant. We're actually quite good at them and have been historically of coming up with chants and songs and stuff. I would walk 500 miles to see Gozzi Ogwu score a goal. I mean, that's quite innovative. Well played. I like that stuff. He didn't do it many times, but fair play. Like, how do you not realise calling someone a sex offender is inappropriate? Yeah. Do you think they sing it and also kind of think to myself, probably should be doing this.
Yeah.
Probably should be doing this. Or do you think they do it and they're oblivious to it?
Yeah.
Like, have just half a millisecond and maybe just share around a brain cell or two between you. And, you know, don't be an idiot. If you're going to be factually incorrect by saying Bournemouth get battered everywhere they go, do you know, I'm almost happy to overlook that because it's one of them that's getting caught on, Jesus, getting caught on everywhere. Everyone's singing it to everybody. Win, lose, or draw. It's like the LA thing. Yeah. Like, everyone's adopted that. That's fine. I get it. It's factually incorrect. Bournemouth are actually very good and they battered us. but like, just have a moment of thought instead of being a complete friggin' idiot. Yeah. And don't sing about Scott Parker being a sex offender. It's just stupid.
Yeah. And don't talk about it. I
think we've covered that.
Yeah. It's just take a look at yourself. I always approach things like this with, if my mum heard me singing that song, what would she think about it? If she thinks you're a dickhead for doing that, I'm probably not going to do it. Would your mum be proud of you singing about Adi Yusuf or calling a complete random stranger a sex offender? Probably.
There are lines. You can do the way your shit when the goalkeeper takes a goal kick.
Yeah.
That's fine. Because the goalkeeper knows he's a darn sight better at being a goalkeeper than you are at doing anything. So that's fine. Like, I that's okay. That's,
even Dylan Barnes.
Across the line now. Even Dylan Barnes. Okay. Even though his distribution is worse than Josh Wagoner's, which is saying something.
That must have been hard for you to talk about Josh Wagoner in that negative fashion.
I love the man, but he can't kick a ball straight. So, we've already talked about it too long. Yeah, if you're one of those people, if you're one of those people that sang along, that started it, that thought it was in any way, shape, or form a wise thing to do, you are, quite frankly, a twat.
And not funny. Not funny at all. And I think that is our questions all dried up. Anything else?
End on that. Can't end on me calling fellow Yeovil fans a twat.
You made your bed.
No, I did. I really did. I tell you what. Let's end with
look
this.
Forward Dave Pryor, to Tuesday.
How has it been being back on the Glover's Cast?
Like putting on an old glove, mate. Like putting on an old pair of gloves, fitting straight in. But I have to say, doing it like this is a lot better, isn't it? Look, I can see that you've all looking in front of me here. You've got your the equipment certainly moved on from when we were sort of first doing it over sort of wired headphones for an old iPhone or something. So it certainly looks much more I don't want to say much more professional because that sounds like that you weren't professional in the first place, but
we were not and we are not.
We do pay for the upgraded Zoom though.
Yeah.
So, if you want to sponsor the upgraded Zoom companies, now's your chance. Get in touch. Ian at gloverscast.co.uk, Ben at gloverscast.co.uk. You can sponsor the upgraded Zoom.
Before we go, Dave, have you improved your meal deals yet? Now is a chance to redeem yourself.
Headphones are going off. I don't even want to hear it.
I just don't quite understand what the issue is.
Hummus and carrots.
Hummus and carrots is the issue.
Yeah, I'm still very much on hummus and carrots. Apart from I have to be honest, with the with Christmas having just been and gone, I am a fan of the all the trimmings turkey sandwich that you can get. I don't know if that changes things at all, but that's
do you like the cranberry?
That's only about 6 weeks of the year. Yeah, I'm all over cranberry.
Should we leave it, Ben? Should we cut?
Yeah.
Don't need to hold you back.
Oh, leave it.
Yeah. All right. Cheers, everyone.
And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
There's Lindegaard making Forrest backpedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris, expanding via the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil. Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Madden, after just 6 minutes, gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott. Goal!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.